talk a collaborative method of supporting digital media in the curriculum. I want to welcome our online viewers as well. So just a little how-to here. If you have a question, because of the size of the room, it's probably best that you use the microphone in the aisles. Our speakers are going to be demonstrating the use of clickers, and Debbie is walking around with clickers. If you want to raise your hand if you haven't gotten one, I'll try to make sure everyone can participate.
Right,
and I will leave it at that. Our speakers are from Colgate, and we are going to have them, they're going to introduce themselves individually when they come up. So, welcome.
I guess I'll start. My name is Ray Nardelli. I'm the Director of Digital Media and Interim Director of Academic Technologies. I've been doing that for about 6 months. This is a very academic technology related discussion or presentation that will be given today. And I've been at Colgate about 13 years, started as an instructional technologist and just kind of have been staying with it. I've been doing media projects for about, I would say, 8 years with some faculty who were incredibly adventurous years ago, and they continue to be. So I'll have Sarah introduce herself.
Hi, I'm Sarah Coonsey. I've been at Colgate for 6 years, and I work right now with Ray in the digital media group. So my main focus is to do digital projects, podcasts, and videos with faculty. So it's a very fairly narrow focus, but that keeps me busy. And this is Debbie.
I'm Debbie Kramer. I'm the Learning Commons Librarian, a liaison to a number of departments that I can never remember off the top of my head. As part of the Learning Commons, I work a lot with the technology, and I also do a lot of work with Ray and Sarah with video.
So we're trying to make this collaborative. I mean, there's nothing worse than, you know, asking professors to not lecture and then have a situation where all you're doing is talking. So we did, you know, come up with the clicker idea. Clickers are something we've been implementing at Colgate for the last little while. And so you should all have a clicker. If you don't, you could raise your hand and Joe Lee will hand one out to you. And then also at home, or if you're if you want to tweet, you can tweet to the hashtag CUCEL, and Debbie will be monitoring that. And if you're just afraid to raise your hand, you have a question or a comment, Debbie can kind of interject that into the presentation. And that's also a way for any viewers at home or from your office to be able to answer a question that we have, a clicker question. There's no way for our online viewers to do that. So you can go through that. You can go to the next. So. That CUCEL stands for Colgate University Collaboration for Enhanced Learning. CEL, we've been around since almost when I started. It was back in 2000. It was an early initiative to bring the library and the IT department together. And it was, I would say back then, kind of a forced relationship. But over the years, through lots of different people and kind of evolution, I honestly believe that we have a really great collaboration formed between library and IT to provide great support for media projects to our faculty. So right there, this is a kind of a snapshot of the group. Currently, we have 5 IT, 3 librarians, but we'll have another librarian coming on soon. It's kind of a revolving door of a membership. Let's see. So. Yeah, I think we can go to the next slide. So this is just a picture of how things have gone at Colgate when we're dealing with media projects. I started in 2004 just as an instructional technologist. I supported a professor who we're going to hear a little bit later, assuming technology works correctly. We have a little one-minute clip of this professor. But he went to Beijing with 30 students for 3 weeks, and he wanted each of his students to create a 15-minute documentary on an aspect of the Beijing culture. So I helped him with that. So he's the 19, well, actually, yeah, it was 19, it wasn't 30. It was 19 students back in 2004. Then it just kind of, you know, things started to pick up. YouTube became more prevalent. Internet video was there, and then all of a sudden, for various reasons, which we can go into later, we started to beef up our support, our facilities, and you can see what happened to last year. We serviced 253 students. Now, depending on the size of your institution, that might not seem like a big number, but it is about 10% of our student population. So I feel like that's a pretty good number to be supporting at this point, I think.
Okay. So to see who's out there, we've got a clicker question to find out who our audience is today. Audience is very important when you're talking about doing a media project, so we better figure out who our audience is. So if you could please vote, poll, on whether you're ITS, library, teaching faculty, or some other. So far, this is what we have.
Not a surprise.
I really don't know how many we passed out. So if we're done, didn't want
to. What's that? Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. Absolutely. You need to turn on the power button. And let me move this for a second. We also, see if this works. There's the power button. We also see the little check mark next to the B. They're brand new clickers. And we noticed in testing, some of them are sticky. The buttons are sticky. So if you don't get the check mark, it didn't register. So just try it again. Look for the check mark. So this is who we have. Again, not that surprising.
Interesting that we were a library track. We thought we might be teaching and learning, so then we were curious how many librarians would come because it was a part of the library track. But
we have 9.
There we go. Looking pretty good there. Okay.
Okay. So then our next question, let me get back and forth between all the technologies, is if you've worked on media projects, what have you worked on? So we've got podcasts, videos, posters, more than one, or I haven't done any. We've got a lot of multiples.
That's good, though. I feel like we're kind of speaking to the choir here, and we'll get a lot of feedback at the end of our presentation to find out some of the things that you're doing that you find are working. So just really quickly, a little bit more about our collaboration. I'm one of those people who don't like that term, teach a man to fish and that kind of thing, because I really believe that partnership is hugely important when it comes to especially IT. If I want a faculty member to use multiple technologies, I tell my staff that we have to realize that we have to partner with the faculty because we can't expect them to be the content experts and come in there and deal with everything else that they're dealing with and also teach how to do a video project or teach how to do good audio recording and editing or teach how to, make a visual presentation, on a poster. So partnership is something that I talk about all the time. We have 3 bubbles up there. Obviously, our faculty are the most important part of that because they come to us with the content knowledge and they also come to us with the learning goals. Most of the time they're coming to us with like a blank page with learning goals in mind, but not really sure how to apply them to new technologies. There's another bubble that I'd like to see there. This is just something that is in my vision of all this, and that is we found that when teaching media, we don't really have an expert that can talk about story development, narrative development. And I think there's a whole new language when it comes to media development that liberal arts institutions, anyway, need to start recognizing because we have writing centers, we have speaking centers, and I think we need to have centers that deal with writing for media. So I would like to see, in fact, I'm lobbying hard. We're developing a new strategic plan at Colgate. I'm lobbying hard to make media literacy something that the entire campus is more aware of and something that we can support. So I think Sarah's going to talk about IT.
Okay. So what IT brings to the table, to this collaboration, is we bring the tools. We have the equipment, the audio recorders, HD cameras, tripods, light kits, down to a full studio with a green room. So we've got the tools. We also have the computers. We've got a Mac lab of 20 iMacs. We have the software. We use Final Cut Pro at Colgate for our video projects, as well as GarageBand, Photoshop, Soundtrack, that kind of thing. We also bring the expertise on the software and the hardware to help the students and the faculty. And the other thing we bring is the culture of innovation and the adaptability so that things can change. As most of you know, you can't do this semester what you did two semesters ago. That's old news and things are changing. So we have a culture in IT where we can change rapidly and adapt. Not in contrast totally to the library, but one of their great skills, which Debbie will talk about, is documentation. And one of our great skills is doing. So, what does library bring to the table?
Well, just like Sarah said, one of the strengths that the libraries bring is having a strong culture of assessment and documentation. That way we're always considering, how can we do this better? Is this an efficient use of our time? Is this an appropriate use of media inside the classroom? We also have, because we're so used to doing documentation, it makes it really easy for us to help out our IT colleagues of keeping track of what went well, what didn't go well as the years go on. Another thing that we bring that is really important is the transliteracy aspects of being a librarian. And I use transliteracy as kind of an overwhelming, over-encompassing term for not just the traditional information literacy classes that we often do, but also video media literacy, how to find media, how to find appropriate media, what are the legal and ethical implications of using media as well as information, how to communicate through those areas effectively in a scholarly way, and also being able to help students guide them through the analysis after you've done the project. How does it work? And a lot of our librarians at Colgate actually do come from an education background. So we also have a lot of people who are experienced in working and teaching and developing syllabi, developing the classrooms, developing the assignment text. So that helps us out when we're working with faculty as well.
So yeah, so I can't emphasize enough the partnership that you bring all these different pieces together, and all of a sudden you're able to really provide incredible support to faculty and students that we hear about all the time, how amazing CEL is. And you know, luckily we get faculty to talk at their faculty development meeting once a year, and there's always a CEL presentation, and they're always talking about the amazing collaboration that took place to kind of make the project a success. So I'm just going to quickly give you an overview here. What we're going to talk about is this process. So, you know, I'm assuming you all came to find out, you know, how we support media projects, and maybe, you know, the collaboration piece is something you might be interested in. The process that we developed, there's really a before, a during, and an after with each project. And we're not always great about crossing all the T's and dotting all the I's, but we try real hard. Our library colleagues usually help us keep on top of that. You can go to the next one. So this is Project X. So CEL went through a dormant period in the mid-2000s. And then towards the end of 2000, we had a retreat. It's like 2008 or 7. And we had this retreat. Library and IT went away. We said, how can we really figure out how to provide good service to faculty and partner to really do a good job? And it was decided that we needed to just pick one project and just support the heck out of it in all aspects, in all ways, and document every single thing that we did. Again, library was awesome for that. I mean, totally, I have to say that, you know, from an IT perspective, you know, we are all about, you know, getting the new things, figuring out how to make them work, applying it, and then moving on. And, you know, we're just, at least at Colgate and my colleagues, we're just not that good at stopping, taking a breath, and writing down what it is that we've done. So with Project X, as we called it, we really did a lot of documentation. And that's what we're going to show you over the course of these next slides, is the process that we ended up developing, and we refine it, and we continue to refine it every single project we do with lots of feedback from students and faculty.
So the very first thing that we do before we ever meet with faculty, before we do any kind of talking or anything about it, is that faculty has to come up with an idea. We might be able to come up with all sorts of ideas for different projects, but the faculty member really needs to come up with that small kernel of an idea of, I want to improve how I'm doing this kind of work in my classroom. I want to improve my students' communication. I want to have them look at the research paper differently. Sometimes faculty come to us with a very small, tiny little kernel of an idea, and we help them make it much larger. Sometimes they come with a huge idea of they're going to be creating documentary movies that are 2 hours long and they're going to completely change the world. Sometimes we have to talk them down from what they're going on. Also, as the faculty member comes to us with the project idea, we also try to identify at least one librarian and one IT member who can work with them on the project. Usually it's the liaison for the particular area, and we have a liaison program for the library for very specific departments and a liaison program for ITS for the overarching units on the campus. So sometimes it's the liaison for that particular department or class. Other times it's whoever's the most versed in that particular technology or has done that particular project before. And sometimes it's just who has enough time to learn this new technology, who has the ability to dedicate themselves to it. If it's something brand new, none of us have ever done before, and we have no existing models or documentation for it. So it really depends on the particular project.
Okay.
The last thing on here, based on established assignments, go ahead and go on to the next one.
The next one is the clicker question.
Oh, okay, never mind. And also, before we even meet with the faculty, we do ask them, is this based on established assignments so that we can meet and talk about it at our initial meeting and be able to develop it from there? Go ahead and move on.
So here's the next clicker question. Those of you that do work with faculty, what is the biggest hurdle in convincing them to try a media project? And we have all faced this if you're in IT or library trying to get faculty work with technology. What is the greatest hurdle? So far we have the time, the technophobia, how to grade the project, which can be a concern, the no guarantee of success. Most faculty don't like that no guarantee of success, or something else. We'll be interested to see what the something else is. Do we want to find this out right now? Ray, you want to see what the something else? What's the biggest hurdle?
Any of the others like to tell us what the other hurdle is? No return of value.
Yeah, so
Okay. So they want a measurable. Okay.
No magic bullets there. I mean, I'll just address that. You know, just to say that most of the time, we'll talk about assessment of the project in a little bit. But most of the time, it is just student engagement, which seems to go up, and that's just all, you know, quantitatively. It's very difficult to, you know, come up with numbers to support that, yeah, absolutely, this definitely helped my students learn more, but it was more like, you know, the engagement level went up. The fact that they're putting these things most of the time out there for the world to see made the projects that much more interesting because they weren't just writing for a professor, that kind of thing. So, I mean, we've heard those things before, and I keep looking for a way to, you know, kind of enumerate that, but I haven't been able to.
Well, and that is true. One of the common themes of a lot of our projects is they're to reach a broader audience. That's one of the learning goals. So that's pretty easy for them to see why that works. But if it's not your learning goal, then you're right, that wouldn't do it.
And part of that is also, you know, we'll talk about it in a little bit, but developing the learning goals and actually identifying concrete learning goals is important. The idea is I want my students to make a movie and there's no why and there's no actual outcome from it, then it's not going to be as effective. They're not going to see what those outcomes are. How did it improve the classroom? So moving on to the next portion, We do a little bit of initial planning, and we always try to have a meeting with the faculty member. We try to do it before the semester starts. Sometimes we go a little bit into the semester. Sometimes we're doing it a semester or a year before the actual project happens. In this particular meeting, we talk about a lot of things with the professor. The next several slides are going to cover a lot of the things that we talk about. The level of cell support can really change depending on how this initial meeting goes. Like I said before, sometimes they have a tiny little kernel, this tiny little idea, and we help them explode it out. Sometimes they have the giant idea, and we're like, you know, that's just not going to happen. Students are not going to create two-hour documentaries that are going to be engaging for everybody when they've never even had a film studies class. So we kind of talk this through with the professor during this initial meeting. Another thing, we do ask them to bring any existing assignment text, rubrics that they use if they want to base it. Say, for example, they want to go from a research project and change it into a video project. We want to see what were you evaluating with the research project. What was important to you for that research project and what wasn't going very well? What are you hoping to get out of the video? And we can use that to help kind of map the existing assignment onto doing something with video. We can go on to the next. So to talk about the learning goals a little bit, it's really important in this meeting that we talk to the faculty about what are the concrete goals you have. The idea is, I just want to do video because videos are cool. That isn't going to get you a very good outcome with a particular project. If they're saying, you know, I want my students to engage with the content more, okay, how would you measure that? What kind of engagement are you talking about? Talk to the professor and draw out this information so that they have a clear idea in their mind and we have a clear idea of what we need to focus on as we help them support the particular class. One great example of a learning goal that came out of initial discussion was a faculty member said, I'm in this peace and conflict class where they talk about marginalized conflicts, the Project X that Ray had referred to earlier. And they write this research paper about this forgotten conflict, and it's death and dying, and it's so depressing, and everybody leaves this class just depressed. I want them to do podcasts, and I want them to put them out there to have other people listen to it, to get the information about these forgotten conflicts out to the public, to reach people, and to really feel like I'm doing something. And so that was a very concrete goal, and it was one that she was actually able to reach. The students felt at the end of the semester, I felt like I was helping the people in this particular situation. I was helping to expand the conversation out there, and wound up being, I don't know if it still is, but initially it was our number one download on the iTunes U for quite some time, marginalized conflicts. Also, moving ahead a little fast on me.
Sorry.
I also want to go back to the project timeline. I just wanted to talk about that for a moment. That because we are working, we might have 200 students doing a video project in a particular semester. It was really important to talk to the faculty about what are realistic goals, what are realistic timelines for this, when should things be due. That way we don't have 200 video projects coming due at the end of the semester and we have a classroom of 20 computers and a few IT and library people available to help them. Trying to space it out was really important. The final part of this, now you can go on to the next one.
Okay.
Thank you. Sharing set documents. Part of that documentation that we do year after year after year is so that we don't have to constantly reinvent the wheel. And that's one of the big things that have helped us with this collaboration is that by having this documentation, these set ideas, that we could always pull them out and say, how can we change this for your particular class? How can we make it better, meet your goals? These are actually available online on the session website for this particular session. You can download it. It's a zip file of PDFs. It has two sections, documents for faculty, documents for IT. I wanted to point out specifically the cell process document underneath documents for IT. That's basically our entire presentation right there. All of our notes, everything you want to know about our process is really written out in that document. And some of these are things that we've developed, such as a media rubric. Some of these we actually, we ask professors to let us use their syllabi, let us use their assignment text, the rubrics, again, for other classes as examples for other faculty. And so we do actually have a couple of examples in this particular folder from a faculty member who took our media rubric, looked at it, said, I don't know if that's meeting my needs, and created a whole new rubric for her class, first time she did a video project. So you can, and we did get her permission to share this. That's always a good thing to remember when you're dealing with any intellectual work, is always getting permission.
Okay.
I mean, maybe this goes without saying, but I found that, you know, before we really established, this is nothing groundbreaking here. All we're doing is we're documenting a process and we're sticking to it. So that when you do have that first meeting with the faculty member, you don't just sit down with a blank sheet of paper. You come with a set of documents that's going to help them think this through, because most of the time they're coming, you know, with not a lot of input on their own, just, you know, they're interested in engaging students in a different way, and it's really our job to come there prepared and give them things to walk away with and maybe call us back within the week after they've got a chance to digest some of these things and think about it. So, I mean, I would say of what we just had up there, you know, it's the main concept that I think is important to take away is, you know, go to that initial meeting prepared. I mean, really have a set of documents that they can take away with and try to internalize and make it their own. We found often that one of the resistance points was, how do you grade a media product project? And whether it is a poster or a podcast or Wikipedia entry, or there's so many different ways, and it just, when you're thinking outside the box, it's very difficult, I think, for faculty to think, I don't know how to do that. I'm just going to kind of avoid that. But it was through working with professors at Colgate and this one professor, this Chinese professor, who first really kind of enlightened me as to how to grade these projects. And I'm going to let John talk for a second, and then I'll say a couple.
Evaluating projects is also kind of more diffuse. You can't lay everything down on the final project. What you need to do is lay out the steps for the project. First, make an initial proposal. Maybe that's a tiny percentage, right? And then write that up into a draft. Maybe present on that what they want to do, present that in class, and get a few more points of credit on that. And then write up some other proposal, have a rough draft, and get some score for that as well.
Yeah, I was afraid that would happen. Yeah. I wasn't going to say this, but I'm going to say it now. We had this whole presentation all set on our Mac environment, and Mac doesn't project to the online audience, so we had to totally revamp our thing today at noon, and part of it is that the videos, I did create Windows WMV files, but evidently only the first 30 seconds or something are playing, so sorry about that. What John was basically saying was that grade the process, and I still remember the light bulb, it was like one of those light bulb moments for me. It's like, don't grade the project, grade the process, because faculty can figure out how to do that. They can all these things are gradable elements, right? And everything is basically writing exactly what they know how to grade already. So I think it was huge, epiphany for me, and then I felt really comfortable talking to faculty about grading these projects, because it was really just a series of things instead of like, you know, what am I, how in the world can I grade, you know, an audio essay of 10 minutes, you know, with any kind of confidence. And this is kind of give them the confidence. So, next.
Okay. So, then our next clicker question, I want you to chime in. Why do you think we suggest, and we do strongly suggest, that our faculty model these projects that they're asking their students to do? And so, whether or not it's to have them learn the technology, or we always like plan B, to appreciate the amount of work this is. And so go ahead and vote, and I'll drag this over.
Sounds like you were trying to...
I've got a lot going on up here. the PC environment. I'm not that comfortable with the PC environment. So we have all of the above. That's the right answer, by the way, all of the above. And assessing is an issue, and a lot of faculty are uncomfortable with it until we talk about those different gradable elements. And this is, when we say we like them to create a model, we actually offer in this. Those were the options. These are our answers.
No easy way to do this.
No, there really isn't.
Especially on a PC.
So when we say we like them to model it, we offer them that opportunity. We have a 3-day workshop in the summer that follows the model from the Center for Digital Storytelling. And faculty sign up, and we've had great success with this, and they create a digital narrative. And we go through the story circles, and we go through the full process in the summer with the faculty. And so far, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe everyone in the last 2 years who has taken the workshop, either in the fall or the spring, has implemented a video narrative into their coursework.
One person didn't.
Okay.
Huge success, though. I mean, it's just, you know, working with faculty for 13 years like I have, you do a workshop, and then you're lucky if you hear from them again. But these workshops, again, if you're not aware of the Center for Digital Storytelling, I would strongly suggest maybe bringing them in for a summer workshop, because they did two for us. And, you know, after a while, it was something that we felt that we could do ourselves. And it's been incredibly successful, having almost all the faculty, you know, follow through with it themselves.
So as we talked about, there's creating the project model. If faculty aren't able to do it beforehand, trying to find a model or have a very clear, concrete idea of what they want the final project to look like so that the students have something to work off of. This is also good for the faculty, you know, being able to, if they've never done a video project before, being able to create it and being able to experience that, since everybody knows how to write a paper by the time they're a professor. Two other questions that are really important for this initial planning stage is what is going to be the final presentation? Is it going to be within the class? Is it going to be put up online? Are things going to be put up on YouTube? Because this can affect the different types of instruction we do for the particular class. Do we have to talk about, you know, copyright issues, dealing with YouTube, takedowns, fair use? Do we need to deal with IRB issues? Is this considered... human research? Does it have to go through a particular interview or institutional review board before it can be okayed? Did they get releases for all the pictures that they took, for all the people that they talked to, for all the audio that they used? So these can change definitely how we teach the classes.
Okay. So the next question is, how do we manage all this? And so we're talking about collaboration tools, because if we had to manage our 10 projects per semester with a couple of hundred students and then all of us, we have our collaboration tools, but I'm interested in what your collaboration tools are. So we've got some people, I'm assuming, are using SharePoint. We are a Google Apps for Education school. Some people use the LMS of one form or another, maybe Dropbox. How do you collaborate with your colleagues? And this is... a lot of people using the LMS.
I almost feel like I should be calling this. So, you know, Google's in the lead, all by SharePoint.
Oh, the LMS just took over.
LMS going down. Woo, Google Apps for Education.
Can I just, anybody who's doing anything else other than what we have up there,
the other seven.
Well, what are some of the other things that you guys are using to collaborate?
Adobe Connect?
Everything? Hmm?
Basecamp.
Sorry?
Basecamp.
I tried Basecamp for a while. Yeah?
Wikispaces?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Cythos file sharing.
Okay, haven't heard of that one. Okay.
Okay. This leads us into, as I mentioned, we are a Google Apps for Education school, and this is a brief example of the spreadsheet that I use and that they have access to, and the other cell members, to sort of map out. Debbie mentioned the timeline earlier when she was talking in that initial planning meeting. We have the document that shows if I've already got five faculty with 100 students working and how this maps out. So this is color-coded, and we can see at a glance when we're going to have a bottleneck. We can see if the room is going to be double-booked. We just have one lab that we teach in. So keeping this document filled out accurately keeps us all on track. And then I have a close-up of all those items, and we've got some color-coded, and that has to do with the different sessions. We actually do instruction, sometimes in class, sometimes in the lab. So an example of an in-class session might be helping a faculty member with a story circle, or somehow the narrative development, or it might be going and giving a demo of equipment if they need to check out audio recorders to record an interview. We'll go in 10, 15 minutes, we'll give them the once-over on the equipment. So that's an in-class session. And then we teach Final Cut Pro workshops or GarageBand or whatever the appropriate technology is. There's usually an instructional session. And then there's another color for just lab time. Sometimes faculty will actually make required lab time, class sessions or after class sessions. And so we mark those out. And then everything else up here has to do with my workload, which is account setup. And I always have a block on every course that I work with, a Moodle block. We use Moodle for our LMS. And so the students always know that they can look on Moodle for my contact information, the lab hours, the instructions, any specialized instructions for that class. Copies go up on Moodle. So the students always know where they can look for information. And this also keeps track of the due dates and the public presentations, as well as our post-project checklist about exporting and archiving and setting out surveys. We survey students and faculty. If it's a new project, we videotape, we record, and interview students and faculty. So here I can keep track of who I've touched, who I haven't touched, who I've yet to touch. So this is the document that keeps me straight. And then, as Debbie pointed out, I almost exclusively do video projects, but the instructional technologists who do poster projects or other types of projects have a similar workflow that they can share.
I've worked a lot with the posters, and we typically use a shared Google calendar so that we know that if we have 100 posters needing to be printed off by Friday, they should be due in enough time so that we can actually print them off.
So all that was sort of the planning stage, the before stage, before the class even starts, before the project is even announced to the students. All that stuff kind of, that happens. And like I said, I mean, there's a lot of different slides up there, a lot of different bullet points. But again, by documenting all this, by kind of keeping it all straight and refining it over the last couple of years, we've been able to kind of, I think, hone this process. Now, the project in motion just is like the project, as the project happens, what do? Well, check-in sessions are really common. If it's the first time we've ever worked with a faculty member, it's not uncommon that we'll meet for like every 2 weeks in the beginning of a semester just to kind of say, how's it going? And we have a cafe in our library, and often we'll just meet in the cafe for a cup of coffee and just talk about things. And, you know, when you have a professor who's really engaged, there's a lot that happens in those meetings that happen every 2 weeks. You think, oh, shoot, why am I meeting with this professor? We really have nothing to talk about. And that's absolutely wrong. And you sit down with them and, you fill up the hour or you go beyond. It's pretty amazing. And then the other thing that Sarah kind of mentioned is if you're thinking proactively about promotional things, oftentimes if something's happening in a class that I think is cool and visual, I'll make sure I get a camera in there to either take still shots or video so that, thinking about promotion, if we want to promote this or show, you know, what faculty have done with technology in the class, we'll have that captured. So always thinking about that as we move forward. There's one other thing. And I just want to talk about those Google Docs for a second. When we moved to Google 3 years ago, you know, email and the calendar was a no-brainer. What was totally surprising to me was the docs and the collaborative nature of that. In IT, we have totally bought into this. And it's just the ability to kind of just put a document together and share it with your team and all of a sudden see it collaboratively being built in a meeting or, you know, on your own time has been incredibly valuable. And I think by the by looking at your responses to that one question, I think most of you are realizing, you know, the power of this. And it's really, I think, come, you know, it's matured a lot in the last couple of years, being able to kind of, you know, collaborate in the cloud. But so the Google Docs thing has been fantastic, I think, for our team especially, because we've been able to collaborate without seeing each other.
We're getting behind. We're moving on. Okay. So we do actually do some instruction, so we do some teaching. So we've got a question here for you all on what is the most effective method to teach students the necessary skills they're going to need. And we do all of these. We offer in-class workshops. We offer after-hours workshops. We have online tutorials, both Camtasia captures on small skills as well as PDFs. We have posters in the lab. So we have all of the above. Let's see what you guys think is the most effective. Okay, so hopefully you can still read part of that while you're still voting. And I concur. We do all of these, but I do think that the most effective is the direct instruction in the lab. Unfortunately, we never get enough time to teach Final Cut, which is why all these other things are necessary. The Moodle presence, so they know where to find the PDFs, the online documentation, the printed posters on the wall. The student has a panic at 11 o'clock at night, and they look up and, oh, that's how you do the pan and zoom. We just don't have enough time. There is no faculty member who has allowed us enough time, like you said, to make a film like that. So, still voting. Okay. Are you getting anything on your hashtag for this? Unfortunately, we are running a little behind. We're going to keep moving. Oh, this is me again. Okay. I'm sorry? Can we skip these? We can skip these.
I think it's more important to get to the assessment.
Okay.
And it pretty much, I mean, of course, we do a lot of instruction. Sometimes it's together, sometimes it's apart, as a lot of different elements, as Sarah had just spoken about.
Okay. So we're looking at the time. We're moving on. We talked about that earlier, about the documentation.
I mean, I guess I'll just kick this part off. So you know, the project is over now. And again, the IT mentality is project's over. Yes, let's move on. Let's go on to the next project, you know. But it's, you know, what we learned is stop, assess, what do we do right? What do we do wrong? Let's add something to the best practices document for that particular project type so that we are actually getting better each time. So I'll go from there.
Okay. So now, just the same way we asked what's the most effective way to teach the skills, it's what's the most effective way to assess. And we do all of these, but I'm interested. Oh, I'm sorry, my fault. We weren't live, so if you just voted, you didn't get it. Now we're live. We do all of these, but I personally believe that the interviews, if you can do a quick debriefing in a room after a public presentation, you get a lot of really good feedback on what went well and what didn't. And we do listen. The after-hours workshops, we didn't do it first. And a lot of the students said they really need more. And, you know, could someone do a night workshop? Could someone do a Saturday workshop? And so if we have enough participation, we do that. Nobody said set forms. Of the set forms?
Student evaluation of teaching. Let's go ahead and move on to the next slide. I think that talks about assessment. Get over there. The set forms are the student evaluation of teaching. At the end of every semester, students must fill out a particular evaluation form for their teacher. The professor will usually tell us, you know, the students were overjoyed with the way the semester went, or the students really slammed me hard in the set forms and said it was way too much work or whatever. So while we don't actually see the set forms, we do get that feedback from the professors to find out what what was the overall kind of student feeling with that particular class. And we also do all sorts of interviews and focus groups and written feedback and ongoing feedback. We're librarians. We love the assessment, and we love helping people do assessment.
Okay, so the next polling question has to do with promoting, because one of our biggest struggles, we know that these projects do enhance learning and do enhance the student engagement and things like that, but we don't have a hard and fast statistic to prove that. So how do we promote ourselves? And here's some options. The campus events is that core curriculum summer meeting that Ray was talking about. We always get our one little time to present, and so we want to cherry pick our faculty who will give the stories. So a lot of people thought the events were very, very effective. Faculty talking to faculty. It's absolutely true. The faculty does not want to hear from the IT department or the library for that matter. No offense, Debbie. So the faculty evangelizing is absolutely our best plan. And in that form, we also are coming up with new ways to have the faculty evangelize other than the summer meeting. We have just recently started a webinar series. We've always struggled with having workshops and faculty don't come. And I'm sure some of you have the same, you know, I see some nodding and some, you know, resignment about that. So we're trying now our Webinar Wednesday lunch series. And different instructional technologists will be doing different 30-minute webinars. Mine is coming up on the 28th, I believe. And I have faculty and students on video discussing these projects. So the hope is that faculty will tune in at lunch and listen to their colleagues and then be able to ask questions. In my case, everyone's on tape. I'm not going to have anyone live there, so I'll have to answer the question for them. But I have six different faculty on camera talking, so they'll be able to talk with their associates.
Yeah, the hope is to build a library of these. So, I mean, you know, the two big challenges of any kind of faculty training is you know, getting them there when they need to be there and then getting faculty to present so that faculty can hear from directly from faculty. But by doing this, in each webinar, our goal is to have one or two faculty on camera, not necessarily live, but, you know, where they're talking about the projects that they've worked on, how they used it, how it benefited their class, or how it benefited, you know, the engagement factor. And then we'll just kind of keep those in an archive, and hopefully it'll be a way that other faculty can look at just to see what, because that's one of the questions we hear. We don't know what our colleagues are doing with technology. And at Colgate, unfortunately, they don't provide a lot of venues to talk about teaching. That might change, but that's just the way it is. So it is kind of one of our responsibilities, I think, to, you know, to kind of help with that. And I'm just going to talk about this for a second. You could have the best plan possible, but what I've found is until we had a facility that we could call our own, that we could draw people to, that we could you know, hold events in, that we could provide support in, so students basically know if they come to this facility, they're going to get help. Until we had that, one of the reasons that the bar chart early on that you saw kind of raised up, went so high, is because all of a sudden we had our own facility. And actually, we have a temporary facility. This coming summer, we're going to have a $1.5 million renovation to a room, and we're going to have a really nice facility. So the teaching space can't be undervalued. It's a physical space that helps define your brand, I think. And then support, what I mean by that, you know, that sounds so obvious, but it's more like it's after-hour support. So we hire lots of students. We give students... We train students to use these technologies, and then we put these students in our facility so that the students are there from, you know, 6 o'clock in the evening till 11 o'clock at night, you know, there to help students, so students know that if they get, you know, if they get into trouble or if they're having, you know, difficulty, that there's someone there to help them. That can't be undervalued either. So we could provide the best possible support we can possibly muster during the day, but when they're actually working on these projects, they need something, whether it's, you know, and I've often wondered, like, how can we do some kind of online, you know, tutoring kind of thing, like live help, but, you know, haven't gotten there, but anyway, that's just a huge, you know, huge part of this.
And that only leaves 1 minute for questions.
Oh, 1 minute.
We talked too much, sorry. But does anyone have any questions?
Yeah, go ahead. Definitely, no. It's a part of our rubric. I think if our rubric is the library developed the rubric, and it's is a part of those documents that you can see. So it's definitely a part of that. But I guess we were speaking mostly to when we were talking to faculty about how to grade projects. That's not something that we talk about initially. I think faculty who have done these projects for a few semesters, they tell us. I mean, I have one faculty member on camera saying that it took 3 semesters before she really felt like she can look at a product and like kind of take the content out and understand, you know, what a good project was. It took 3 semesters, and that was so valuable for her to kind of voice that, because it's not something that you're going to be able to figure out right away, and you have to be uncomfortable with that as a professor, I think. Yeah, exactly.
And that's one of the things that we also try to do, because we've done so many of these projects and we're so familiar with these items. A lot of us have art backgrounds, film background, humanities backgrounds, is that we try to model for the faculty, you know, because they might be wowed by some filter somebody used in Final Cut Pro, and we're like, you know, actually that's really overused. I want to give them extra points for that, and model for them what are good practices and quality of product. And it does take a while before you get that hang of it.
Yes.
I'm sorry if you said this and I missed it, but is this done only with is this being done only for
Is this being done only for undergraduate core classes, or have you done it with graduate curricula too?
We don't. The only graduate school that we have is Master's in Education at Colgate, so we haven't done very many work with the graduate students. They do a lot of video projects. I think we have had some overlap.
That professor, actually, one of the professors in the education department, is very much interested and uses this stuff all the time. So there have been some graduate students that have worked with media, but the idea in that case was because they're going to be teaching and they wanted the teacher candidates to be able to understand how this works.
But they're not just the core curriculum. I mean, we have language professors, we have history professors, we have environmental studies and geology. I mean, we've worked with the sciences and all sorts of different things. I think we're like totally over on time.
Yes, I think we should stop, and everyone's welcome.
Yeah, please, if you have any questions. Is there a session after us? Are we in the way? Do you know?
No. You should, you want to mention about the clickers, giving the clickers?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, please do return the clickers.
There's a box.